Okay, next we'll turn it over to John Brooke. John is our regional director for Europe, Russia, and the Middle East. He's based in Brussels. John's territory these days goes a bit beyond his titles, also overseeing some work in Africa and Central Asia. And I'll turn it over to John.
Thank you, Joe, and good morning, everybody. So let me start with the European Union. We move on to the rest of the world. So the European Union, as you know now, we're in the sixth year of the agreement which was made between the United States and the European Union. So the duty-free beef agreement, 48,200-ton quota. And that business developed very, very well for the first 5 years. It's flattened out in the last year. And there are two things which are happening. So it's flattened out because, first of all, as you're all aware, the cost of beef in the United States is very, very expensive. And, of course, the fact that in the last 6 months we've seen a 20% devaluation of the euro against the US dollar. And US beef in the European Union is the highest priced US beef sold anywhere in the world. So we're shipping full carcass sets to the European Union, and some of those cuts are sold in the European Union at double the price of the next offer from quality of domestic production or from other origins. But this market has remained robust. The demand is there. I'm extremely impressed to see the resurgence of steakhouse-style restaurants all across Europe. There is a niche population which is very interested in quality. They're prepared to pay for it. And the work that has been done by both the US farmers producing the NHTC, the packers shipping it to their importers and distributors in Europe, has been just amazing. And despite this severe economic change, there is still great, great interest in that business. The second aspect is now that we are faced with the problem that for the first 5 years of the quota, the quota was never fully used, so there's space for expansion. But now we are seeing other origins, specifically Australia and Uruguay, who have significantly increased their shipments under this quota. So our share of the use of the quota is now just under half of the total use, and at the end of the quota year, this year the 30th of June, we will see for the first time the 48,000 tons being completely used, or maybe there'll be just a little bit of tonnage left over. So we have a problem. We have a problem that needs to be fixed. We've been discussing with the US government now for a long time. The government is in negotiation with the European Commission to seek a means by which the benefit of this quota comes to the country that initiated the discussion, the United States, and that we don't see the benefit passing to other countries. But I remain very optimistic because the product is just a fantastic product. It's a quality which you don't find on a regular basis in the European Union, and it's very widely recognized now amongst professionals and in the high-end restaurant sector in the European Union, and it's not going to go away. It's established, people want it, people will pay for it. So in the discussions between the Commission and the government, the Commission keeps on saying to the United States, well, don't worry, you know, we're negotiating this free trade agreement, this TTIP, and we will find a solution through this TTIP. Well, we've had 9 rounds of negotiation, and really, so far, agriculture in those 9 rounds has not really advanced at all. I accept every invitation I receive to go and talk to European farmers groups about TTIP and about US meat agriculture, and I must say it's stimulating the discussion, but it's impressive to see how the pushback from the European agricultural sector is growing. So you've got a whole load of NGOs who are against trade. You've got a lot of political parties in the European Union today, of sort of nationalist parties who are
first of all, anti-Europe, anti-international trade. And we currently have a European Parliament, which is not in favour of this. So it's going to be a very big haul, and we're not going to have a short or medium-term solution to our beef exports to the European Union through TTIP. So we need to find something which is going to get us through until maybe such time that a bigger deal occurs. To move on to pork in the European Union, we do have a little bit of US pork business going to the European Union, which again is remarkable, given that the European Union is the world's largest exporter of pork, needs to shift 2.5 million tons of pork outside of the European Union. And as Phil touched on, the closure of the Russian market to EU pork has caused both tremendous problems for the European farmers and agricultural sector, as it has created competition for United States product. So the European Union, again, the European Union negotiates with Russia, but individual member states have been trying to find a fix. And so from time to time you hear rumours or even confirmation that one country or another is on the point of breaking a bilateral deal with Russia. And then it comes back to the larger political picture, where the 28 member states at the highest political level say, no, hold on a minute, we don't want to see any breaking of our unified position vis-a-vis Russia and, of course, the Ukraine. So the European sanctions against the Russian individuals are set to expire on June the 30th. So there's a meeting on June the 30th, which will be the point at which the European Union has to decide whether they're going to continue or whether there's going to be so much pressure, particularly from the pork sector, to say, no, it's time to ease these sanctions against Russia in the hope that Russia will then in turn lift the sanctions on European pork. From my point of view, you know, we've got our noses very, very close to agriculture, so we can sort of see all the reasons why that might happen. But that said, I think, you know, the United States, their position is very clear on that. And the United States, no doubt, in consulting with the European Union, would seek to maintain a firm position. So personally, I would not put my money on seeing any change from July the 1st onwards, which means that we're faced with very, very strong competition from European pork around the world. And again, a 20% devaluation of the euro against the dollar in 6 months is a phenomenal shift in competitivity. I remind you, and this comes up in the TTIP discussions, that the European Union and the United States are the world's two largest trading blocs. $1 billion of trade per day takes place. So 20% of a billion, that's $200 million of margin or cost or competitivity, which has shifted. It's just phenomenal. So the Russian market closed to US beef and pork. Our team in Russia, we have two people, Galina in Moscow, Yuri in St. Petersburg. They've been working hard to develop interest for US beef and pork in all the states surrounding Russia, and they've done a fantastic amount of work going to Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Ukraine. You know, you would think that Ukraine is suffering tremendously. Of course it is. They've had 60-70% devaluation of their currency. But I was in Ukraine in December, and again, there is a niche for the high-quality US products in Ukraine, and people very much appreciate it. So it's not, of course, volume business in these states, but it's value business, and development is always very, very important. If I move on to the Middle East. So the Middle East is the sector that I deal with that is, I would say, the most stable. So it's faring very well. A lot of people said with the drop of oil prices, things would get very difficult in the Middle East. But basically, the sovereign wealth funds in the Middle East are significant. The population is growing. Places like Dubai, the success of the tourism industry in Dubai is phenomenal. And the demand for quality product is growing, and so that business, again, for beef muscle cuts to the Emirates, it's not enormous, but it's significant and it's very much worth investing in. We're here in San Antonio in Texas. I'd say the Texas Beef Council has given us significant support for chef training in the Emirates consistently year after year, and that is something which has helped a lot to develop that market. Egypt is, of course, the world's largest importer of beef liver, and Egypt again has been through significant political turmoil. Egypt's pound has slipped against the dollar, but we have not seen any impact on that on demand. Our capacity to deliver 130,000 tons of beef livers, kidneys and hearts continues, and that is something which is very, very positive. So just to finish, as Joe mentioned, we are also developing our list of contacts and trade relationships across Africa, and specifically West Africa. Again, Africa expected to have the world's fastest growing population in the next decade. While, of course, the vast majority of those people remain very, very poor, the population growth, it's like Asia. There is a developing middle class. We've seen development of much more modern shopping in some places in Africa with modern stores, shopping malls, a middle class developing where there is potential to develop business, and not just the traditional business to Africa, which again was an awful business, but to get some quality product into Africa. So I will stop there. We can move on to questions.